From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Senate Democrats set up a Wednesday vote on a bipartisan infrastructure deal as they prepare for an additional $3.5 trillion spending bill. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. For months now, a group of Democrats and Republicans have been negotiating on this bipartisan infrastructure framework. Roads, bridges, broadband, that sort of thing. They finally settled on a plan that includes about $600 billion in new spending. And Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is now calling the first procedural vote to move forward on that on Wednesday. What's interesting, though, is we don't have a bill yet. And so Schumer is saying, he's saying it's not a deadline to determine every final detail of the bill. Yes on the motion to proceed simply means the Senate is ready to begin debating and amending a bipartisan infrastructure bill, no more, no less, unquote. So, Kim, what's going on here and what is the Schumer strategy?
Well, what's going on here is that Chuck Schumer, all the way back last month, promised the very eager members of his party that he would get an infrastructure bill done before their August recess. The problem is that these things take time, especially when you're engaged in bipartisan negotiations. And so the problem is that all of these, this group of at least 10 Republicans and Democrats, or a few more on the Republican side, they're still working out key details, including both the size and the scale of the bill, as well as disagreements over how to pay for it. And while they're putting in long hours, they had a marathon session on Sunday and have been working on Monday and today, they're just not there. And the real issue here is that Schumer's pushing his suggestion that, well, we're going to move ahead on this and you can just fill in the blanks later, has really annoyed the Republicans in the group. And there's now a giant question as to whether or not they will vote to proceed tomorrow on Wednesday, given that they feel they're being jammed.
Yeah, and I'll read a couple quotes from a couple of those Senate Republicans. Roy Blunt, the Missouri senator, he says, "There's no bill. You can't expect that many Republicans to move forward on a pretty vague concept." Bill Cassidy from Louisiana says, "How can I vote for cloture when the bill isn't written?" Unquote. And so, Bill, it seems like now Schumer has set up one of these classic games of Senate chicken. And the question for Wednesday is, who's going to blink?
Right. And I'm hoping the Republicans should unify. This, to me, suggests that Senator Schumer is in a tough position. You know, this vote tomorrow would help him. And I don't see why Republicans should go along with that. You know, it is vague. They don't know what it is. It makes it more likely to get it passed by going forward. And I think Republicans should insist on the terms and not kind of write a check that's going to be filled in later. I'd like to know more about the infighting in the Democratic Party. You know, what Senator Schumer thinks, you know, how far he thinks he can go and get all the votes. But I mean, this is the benefit of votes. They're very clarifying. There's a lot of speculation before a vote, what you do and what you want in the bill. And then finally, you have to vote on something. And we get a lot of clarity from those votes.
And Kim, you mentioned that they're still haggling over some of the details. One of those seems to be how to pay for this infrastructure spending. Part of the plan had been to put some money into the IRS and close what is referred to as the tax gap, trying to get some more money out of people who owe those taxes. And that seems to be out now. Republicans have objected to that. And so is part of the question here what kind of money they need to come up to replace that?
Absolutely. And so one of the things that they're now debating to try to replace that gone IRS money. And by the way, I applaud the group for actually doing that. It has made the bill better if we end up getting a bill, because this was a license for the IRS to just hire tons of new auditors, and the notion that this was actually going to yield anything real in revenue was always pretty fictional. So they're now considering an equally potentially fictional pay for, however, that has to do with rebates that are provided to pharmacy benefit managers. This was something to do with a Trump rule. It's not clear that actually will yield any revenue. It's also being litigated at the moment. And I think that that has some concerns in the group. The problem is that the money that they're looking to replace is about $100 billion. So now they're in the middle of discussions about whether or not they ought to simply reduce the size of the bill. There's a lot of pushback on that. The other problem is some, you know, a few other very easy potential pay-fors or ideas that have come up. Democrats are pushing back on Republicans using them in this bill because they want to save them for paying for provisions that are going to be in their broader $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. And this is why this is just totally the wrong moment to be proceeding. You know, Schumer said that, well, we'll just go along and if you can fill in pieces later. They have no legislative text. They have no congressional budget score on what money is actually going to be realized or not. And the notion that you can just pick out pieces and debate that as you go ahead without the full idea in plan and in mind, this just goes to show how crazy that is, given the vast sweep of the negotiations that continue. So I think Republicans have a very good point. They just need to sit back and wait and give them another week because they are close, but let them get this done.
So what is Chuck Schumer doing then? I mean, if he knows all of this, he's spoken to these Republican senators who've been in these bipartisan talks. I mean, is part of what he's trying to do to set up a vote so that he can say that Republicans are not passing anything, they're not passing this bipartisan infrastructure plan, they're just trying to delay things, and then add that stuff back into this broader reconciliation budget package? I mean, it's interesting. Here's what Bernie Sanders said recently. He said, if talks for whatever reason fall apart, we're going to have to put physical infrastructure into the reconciliation, unquote. And so, Bill, it seems like a sort of a heads I win, tails you lose situation.
Yeah, I mean, I can't read the mind of the Senate Majority Leader, but it seems to me Schumer wants two things. I do think he wants this bill passed. And I think, you know, Bill, removing the IRS part, which the Republicans objected to, was part of trying to get them on board. But I think his second aspect, as he's doing that, is also to try to put pressure on the Republicans to, you know, to, if it fails, to make sure they take the blame as the party that's just blocking everything and blocking roads and bridges and so forth. So I think he's trying to do that too. Again, for all this angst and stuff, it's going to come down to a few votes. It's going to come down to Republicans deciding, is infrastructure really worth all this other stuff that we're likely to get in reconciliation, or can they get their way? And I mean, again, I don't really see the advantages for Republicans going along. I sort of agree with Kim. I think they're in a good spot now to put the pressure on, and they shouldn't be too eager to make a deal.
But the idea that provisions are fungible between these two bills, and if we don't get one thing in the bipartisan infrastructure bill, we can just put it in the reconciliation bill. If the whole infrastructure bill falls through, we can just put it all in the reconciliation bill. I mean, Kim, it sort of puts the lie to me to this idea that these bills are delinked. I mean, remember we had this whole conversation about when Biden said he wants them both at the same time. He wants to sign them both. If he doesn't get them both, he won't sign the bipartisan bill. Then he sort of walked that back. And we had this whole kind of phony conversation about these, how these are totally separate bills. There's nothing connecting them at all. And now here we are, and we find out that that's not true.
It certainly exposes the double cross that Republicans have walked into. It's been clear all along that the goal of getting them to take part in these negotiations was to, at least from the Democratic perspective, was to siphon off you know, $600 billion, $1 trillion worth of the priorities they want to pass, and say that you had bipartisan agreement. And then they were always just going to go. I mean, think about it. These guys are sitting there making for weeks, and they've been making all of these very tough decisions, right? The tough and hard decisions. What goes into this bill? What can we really afford to pay for? What does the country really need? And it doesn't really matter. It matters not one bit, because everything that ended up on the cutting room floor is just going to get rolled up and put back into this follow-on reconciliation bill. And if I were among the Republicans who'd taken part in this process, I think I'd be pretty unhappy about the way my so-called bipartisan counterparts on the Democratic side have essentially treated their involvement in this. And I do find that interesting as well. Somehow Schumer either leaned on, or the White House leaned on, all of the Democrats that are taking part in these bipartisan negotiations, and they're all on board with Schumer's strategy, saying, oh yeah, this is fine. Let's just have a vote. We'll get there. Don't worry. It almost makes you wonder if the whole Democratic Party has already decided they're just going to pass everything, and maybe they've decided just be easier to jettison Republicans, and this is their excuse to do so.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Well, if that's the case, Bill, I mean, Kim was making the argument that it seems like Democrats have decided they're going to spend what they want to spend. And these bipartisan infrastructure talks are just sort of a way to get bipartisan cover for some of that, give the president a win. He's talked about bringing the country together. But if that's the case, then what's in it for Republicans? I mean, Ohio Senator Rob Portman has made the argument that the infrastructure spending is a sweetener, and if Republicans can get that done separately, it makes it harder for Democrats to pass everything else, this $3.5 trillion, through the reconciliation budget process. But I'm not sure that that's true. I don't know what you think, Bill.
Yeah, well, first, I agree with Kim's analysis of where this is going. I mean, we have to get back to the fundamental point about the infrastructure and Republicans. It's not a compromise. A compromise is give and take. Each side gives something and gets something in a bill. But the Democrats are saying, okay, we'll give you this in this Republican bill. Like, for example, on the IRS, if you take the funding out of the infrastructure bill, but you just dump it into the reconciliation bill, that's not a compromise. You're just shifting where you're doing it. So in that case, it's very unclear to me what benefit there is for Republicans in participating in this charade, that there's good faith and negotiation. It seems to me that the White House and Senator Schumer, they would like to get the Republicans on board, but if they're not, and they could blame them for being obstructionist and say they're not even for roads and bridges, they'll work that way. I used to think it was something of an argument to say, to use a sweetener argument, that if you do that separately, you make it harder for them to pass all these other things, which now might include a big IRS funding on top of it all. But I'm not sure that's the way it's going. I'm probably with Kim. You look at the pressure coming from progressives and so forth, and this is the problem with Democrats today. They cannot stand up to the progressive wing. And I think the likelihood is that they will pass the reconciliation bill, or they're not worried that the infrastructure stuff takes out a sweetener. They want that stuff. You know, the progressive wing really wants the spending, and, you know, Joe Biden has endorsed it. So I'm not sure that the lack of infrastructure makes it as unappetizing as Senator Portman complains, not in today's Democratic Party. I mean, this is, remember, it's not just spending. This is a radical remake of our economy, putting the government at the center of a lot. This is basically the life of Julia on steroids, to fundamentally, I think, alter the economy of the United States and give the government a much, much greater say. And a lot of those people, I think they're wrong, but they really believe that. So that's not a gamble I would like to take.
But although I mean, congressional Democrats have said they plan to move forward on a budget reconciliation framework of about $3.5 trillion. Kim, correct me if I'm wrong. We don't have that bill or details of that proposal in any great specificity either yet. So do we have a sense of what would be in that budget package?
So we have a few top line numbers that came out of a very broad fact sheet. There is, again, it's very vague, but I can run through a few of those. And the extension of an expanded child tax credit, the extension of expanded earned income tax credit, the extension of a child and dependent care tax credit, a whole bunch of clean energy investments, including climate smart agriculture and wildfire prevention and forestry, clean energy tax incentives. There's a whole education and family side, which include the free community college, child care, paid family medical leave, more food assistance, universal pre-kindergarten. Then there's a whole manufacturing and housing part, new affordable housing payouts, new small business dollars, and then a whole healthcare section, which is a vast expansion of home healthcare workers, new dental and vision and hearing benefits in Medicare, and it goes on. So one thing that's really interesting, there was an analysis out from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, which is a nonprofit. It sort of falls in the middle on a lot of things. They don't like budget gimmicks. They pointed out that if you actually expand the analysis for how much this would cost over a true 10-year window instead of some of the budget gimmicks Democrats are using, this bill could cost as much as $5.5 trillion.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot. The thing to keep in mind with a lot of these programs is they become entitlement programs and they become essentially permanent. I mean, this is not the same kind of thing as with an infrastructure deal where you spend $100 million to build a certain set of roads or pipelines or canals or broadband infrastructure, transmission, electrical transmission infrastructure, or what have you. I mean, once you set in place a program for free community college for anyone under a certain income threshold. Last I checked, the Biden proposal from his campaign was something like anybody under $125,000 a year. That is essentially a permanent program from here on out. And Bill, it's not as if the federal fisc is overflowing with funds. We're at debt as share of the economy is about 100%. It's in the process of passing the record set at the end of World War II. And there are programs like Medicare, where the trustees are saying that Medicare is a trust fund is going to run out at the end of 2024. So there are problems here that that have not been dealt with as it stands.
Yeah, look, Joe Biden, as a candidate, you know, embraced a vision of the future that has the government having a lot more of a role in our economy, and that prosperity comes from this bigger role, whether it's a bigger IRS or whether it's a, you know, free community college or daycare or something. That is his vision for prosperity, and those visions tend to be very optimistic about revenues that somehow don't come in when you actually institute these programs, and very loosey-goosey about those details. But again, I go back to what you were just saying. This is the life of Julia. Under the Obama administration, they put out this cartoon, and it was about a woman named Julia, and it showed from cradle to grave when she was born, when she had children, when she went to school, how she was dependent. Not, they wouldn't call it dependent. They would say how she benefited from government programs. And what you're saying, when it's permanent, that's the part that that really worries me, because it's not just that it's permanent spending, it's kind of a permanent middle class dependency on the government for a lot of these essentials. And it's kind of more moving the US to a European social welfare model. And the left understands that if programs are limited to the poor, that they're not as popular and they're a little more fragile. But if the entire middle class is dependent on them, they do as you say, they kind of stay forever. It's a lot harder to get rid of an entitlement or something once you put it in. I mean, just take one. If we made the community colleges free, do we ever think it's going back to any kind of paid system? And as the Biden administration is proving, as someone said, you really find out how expensive something is once it's free.
But there's still at least a couple of wild cards in this legislative process. One of these is once the bill gets written, there will be a score of it. And Kim, we're going to have to find out whether all the numbers add up. And they're going to propose revenue provisions, and they're going to propose spending provisions. And a lot of times contentious legislation like this comes down to, can you get it? Can you get the score you need to get it through the process?
Yeah, one of the really interesting aspects about this fact sheet that they put out about what we're going to see ultimately in this $3.5 trillion or more reconciliation bill is they have these little caveats saying, you know, for instance, if you look at the child tax credit or the earned income tax credit, the fact sheet explained, quote, the duration of each credit's enactment will be determined based on scoring and committee input. That is another way of saying, okay, we're going to step back and wait and see how much the CBO and others say that this is going to cost, and then we'll fiddle with it to try to make it come in at a number that looks more acceptable, that we can claim was actually covered by the tax hikes that we are also proposing. So they've left themselves a lot of wiggle room, but that is an acknowledgement that a lot of this, as you said, is still unknown, because Democrats have tried to downplay the costs of a lot of these programs. And you're probably likely to get a little bit more honesty when you get some of these official scores. I think the other thing that is yet to be seen is if you are going to do this through the budget reconciliation process, as we've talked about many times before on this program, it is subject to all kinds of complicated rules. Reconciliation is supposed to be designed only to deal with spending and revenue. And if you're going to put in a bunch of policy proposals, they're probably not going to make it past the Senate parliamentarian. So you see Democrats eyeing this bill as this big one-time opportunity to jam everything through that they want. But a lot of that is policy that may not make it, like the discussions that they're having right now on immigration proposals they want in there, or discussions, as we mentioned, on union, pro-union provisions. So there's a lot of fights yet to come.
The question there, though, I mean, I think that's all well taken, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out, because it seems sure that they're going to put some of those provisions into the bill, and the leadership of the party at least knows they're going to get struck, but you might as well put them in the bill and then blame the parliamentarian and show the party's base that you're trying. But Bill, the question here is whether the striking of any of those will cause any of these Democrats on the left flank to jump ship. And I guess my view is no. Bernie Sanders or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they may yell and tweet about the parliamentarian, but if they have a $3 trillion, $3.5 trillion spending bill in front of them with all these expansions of these programs, I think they would vote for it anyway, no matter essentially what the parliamentarian strikes.
Yeah, I agree with you. And in fact, I think if the parliamentarian didn't strike anything, the MO for the progressives is no matter what they get, if the parliamentarian didn't strike anything and it all went through, I think Bernie and AOC and this crowd, they would say, well, that's good, but it's not enough. They're not going to be satisfied with anything. So I agree with you, but I do think that they will pocket some spending and move ahead, because again, as you were pointing out before, when you put these programs in, they kind of become permanent. It's not a one-off thing like building a bridge or a road. It becomes a permanent feature of the social welfare infrastructure, and they know that. So I think, I mean, their method is always to hail all sorts of spending, and then say it's not enough. Whatever it is, it's just not enough. It's the same as taxes. They always say, we want the rich to pay their fair share. So you jack up the taxes, and then they say it's not enough. And they never specify what enough is. So I do think they would have, they might get the best of both worlds, you know, thumping their chest to the progressive world and denouncing Schumer and McConnell and all the people in Washington, even while, you know, pocketing what they've won and moving on to agitate for getting the rest of it in another package.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.